Good afternoon. Is this on?
Yes.
All right. David has just pointed out that the only people in the room who can't see the clock are him and me, he and I, and we're the ones keeping track, but never mind. So welcome, everyone, especially those of you who have traveled in from other campuses. Glad to see everyone here today. Let's start with a roll call. Jane?
Abramovich.
Here.
Albertson.
Hi, this is Julie Cassio. I'm calling in for Leif Albertson.
Thank you, Julie. Alexiev. Bandopadhyay.
Yes.
Bret Hart.
Here.
Brown. Stephen Brown. C. I believe Vincent will be joining us a little late today. Chambers. Is that it? Okay. Chen. Oh, he has an excused absence today. Cook.
Yeah, I'm online today.
Oh, hi. Thank you. Davis. Mike Davis.
We can't hear you very well.
Okay, Mike is here. Fallon.
Georgina Gibson acting as an alternate.
Georgina, thank you. Bochisato. Okay. Javier? I'm going to turn the volume up here just one second. And hopefully not get feedback. George Bettisworth. Okay. Gustafson. Hardy. Cindy Hardy. Hi. Sarah Hardy. Is anyone here for Sarah Hardy? Okay. And I know Joanne won't be here today. Heaton. Rob Duke is here for John Heaton. Henry.
Here.
Okay. Jensen.
Catherine Arnford Jensen.
Kathy is here for Karen. Johnston.
Here.
Jolie.
Here.
Larden.
Here.
Lawler.
Here.
Marr.
Here.
McCackern. Meyer.
Here.
Nadine. Newberry.
Here.
Chung Sang.
Okay. Thank
you. Radenbo.
Here.
Great. Reynolds.
Here.
Short.
Here.
Valentine.
Here.
Weber.
Here.
Webley.
Here.
Winfrey.
Here.
Windsor.
Here.
Yari. Okay, anyone here for John Yari? Zhang. Okay, and I see we have Javier in the room now. I'd like to acknowledge our ex officio members, Dabu.
Here.
Okay. Libby Eddy.
Here.
And anyone here for staff counsel, Joella? Okay, we might see her later. Anybody here from ASUAF? Danny Shepard. Okay. We have Dean Lair.
Here.
Paul Lair. Chancellor hasn't joined us yet. Provost Henrik is here. Hi. And I acknowledge that Dean Manson is in the room. All right. Thank you.
All right. The minutes to meeting 187 from December. Were distributed online. Are there any comments, additions, corrections to those minutes? Seeing none, the minutes are approved. As far as today's agenda, it was originally distributed on Thursday. There were modifications, relatively minor ones, issued on Friday. I say this in case any of you missed the fact that there were changes on Friday. So I'm asking now whether there are changes to the Friday's agenda, or shall we adopt the agenda as is? Any comments or changes? Okay, agenda is adopted. Chancellor is not here, but Chancellor's office has approved all of the motions that we passed in our last meeting. These are unit criteria for cooperative extension, amendment of the student attendance policy, two new minors in interdisciplinary studies and emergency management, and an amendment to the transfer credit policy. And there are no motions pending. And the next item is comments by me. And I have several topics to bring up. One is an update on the eLab Task Force report. You may recall this was an effort started by the Statewide Faculty Alliance, and UAF sent three representatives to a statewide committee to draw up recommendations for science labs in general education science courses. And that report was discussed and proposed changes written by this body last spring. Our version was sent to UAA and UAS. UAS also agreed that they liked that version, with one change to a deadline in there. UAA has just last month also approved it with two small changes, neither of which I think will disturb anyone. But at this point, the document needs editing for clarity and to get the points across better. So Faculty Alliance plans to edit this document. Once that's done, it will most likely go to all three faculty senates for a formal vote. So you will see it later this spring. Any questions on that? No. Great. Next is, you all should have received an email from the Faculty Senate office asking faculty to participate in a survey on posting syllabi or an alternative expanded course description. This is something I described to you in our last meeting, and we are essentially trying to gather a wide input from the faculty and get a sense of where they stand on this issue, how much consensus there is on this, and what the concerns might be. So encourage everyone, all of your faculty colleagues, to answer the questions in this. There are six main questions and then five demographic questions. Any questions on that? Okay. I've noticed that the email that we sent around didn't make very clear that in addition to syllabi, we're also considering an option that's not the syllabus, posting an expanded course description. That wasn't really clear in the email message that went out to all the faculty. So if someone asks you about this survey, you might point that out to them. That's clear in the survey itself. If they open up the page and read the preamble to it, all of that's described in the survey page. Then we are about to start elections for next year's Faculty Senate. And email has gone out to the deans and directors' offices because they are the ones who administer the elections. Email has also gone out to all faculty as a heads up that this is beginning, that you should hear about nomination procedures within your units, and this is to make sure everyone is aware and involved if they wish to be. The elections are to be completed by March 20th. Then at our next meeting on March 4th, we're going to open nominations for the next year's Faculty Senate President-elect and this year's Outstanding Senator of the Year. Those are nominations, and they'll open at the March 4th meeting. There will be guidelines for the Outstanding Senator of the Year sent around. They haven't changed from previous years. If any of you want to see them quickly, just shoot me an email or Jane. The process for the Outstanding Senator of the Year is that nominations are gathered. There is a selection committee composed of five people. One is from the Provost Council, nominated by the Provost, and four are from Faculty Senate, and they include the President-elect and three others. And once the nominations are in, that selection committee goes through the nominations and then sends its result to the Senate at the April meeting. At the April meeting, we will also run the actual election for the president, for next year's president-elect. Any questions on all that? All right. Please feel free to ask David or me any questions about especially the opportunity to stand for president-elect. We'd be happy to tell you what's involved, what we think of it.
We'll try not to lie.
That's right, I promise. Anyway, be glad to give any background information that people need as you're considering this. You are welcome to nominate yourself. If you nominate someone else, please be sure that they're willing to do this. All right, thank you very much. One more item. Today at 3:15, there is an event after the Faculty Senate meeting. Mike Davis is running this event. This is, I don't have a good title for it, but it's Legislative Affairs Event with representatives from the Legislative Information Office in Fairbanks. It will be here in this room starting at 3:15, so you'll have a break of 10 or 15 minutes in between meetings. And I encourage anyone who's interested, please do stay for this. This was partly set up for you, and due to some miscommunication, we didn't get the word out very soon. But you all saw, I hope, a message this morning about it, and please, we encourage you to stay. As I said, it is partly for you. It should be interesting. Mike has just spent the last week in Juneau at the legislative offices, and we will have participation from the Fairbanks people as well. Later on in your agenda at 2:30, under guest speakers, one of them will be Mike Davis, and he will give you a preview of what's going to happen at this event. So you'll hear more about it later in the meeting. All right. So I'll turn this over to our president-elect.
Thanks, Jennifer. Just a quick additional thing on the Outstanding Faculty Senator of the Year. We're looking also for volunteers to serve on that committee. So feel free to nominate yourself. I wanted to announce that Libby Eddy has been appointed as registrar permanently. She's no longer interim, so congratulations, Libby Eddy. And just some updates on some things that are going on. And the first is that the University of Alaska statewide system put together a workshop in January that had 10 people from each campus, Fairbanks, Anchorage, and Juneau, get together down in Anchorage to work on general education issues. And we're going to hear more about that later under new business where there's a motion that's coming up. But that was a very serious step, a very expensive step that was financed by statewide towards enabling the entire system to move forward on revitalizing general education. So that was a big step. The second is that we some time ago reported to you our interest in setting up a interdisciplinary issues committee that would be tasked with identifying institutional barriers and hurdles towards greater interdisciplinary work towards in both instruction and research as well as potentially service. And we're pleased to announce that we have contacted a number of people who were recommended to us, some of whom declined to serve on the committee, but who agreed that they would like to serve. They would like to provide input. But we do have a committee made up of people from all across campus, and I'd like to go ahead and tell you who they are: Ginny Eckert, Gary Kofinas, Josh Greenberg, Chanda Meek, Craig Gerlach, Larry Duffy, Ray Barnhart, Ron Berry, Gary Jacobson, and Silke Schuer. The reason why I mentioned the names to you is because if you know one of these people and you have some issues that you'd like to bring up with respect to interdisciplinary issues, please contact that person to let them know what item you would like to have included in their report at the end. And we'll go ahead and host that online as well. We'll put up a document that will enable you to directly input. And the last thing I wanted to mention, the second to last thing I wanted to mention is that I'm unable to continue as the Faculty Senate liaison with the General Education Revitalization Committee. And Cindy Hardy has graciously accepted the charge of doing that. So thank you, Cindy Hardy. We'll be hearing from her later on about that. And the last thing I wanted to mention is that some of you may recall that we wanted to work on identifying faculty impressions, getting faculty input on learning management systems other than Blackboard. So in collaboration with Carol Gehring, who's Director of e-learning, we are working now on piloting three different alternatives, Desire to Learn, Canvas, and Moodle. Those are three learning management system alternatives to the current one that we use, which is Blackboard. Several of her faculty are now offering their classes in two of these different learning management systems, and we look forward to seeing a report of their experiences. We will also start in the very near future identifying a group of faculty to participate in a focus group doing tasks on these different learning management systems. If you're at all interested in that and trying out these learning management systems, please let me know. And with that, I will relinquish the floor.
Are there any questions for David? Seeing none, let's move on to the Chancellor's remarks. Chancellor Rogers?
Thanks, and it's good to see the most of the Senate here in Fairbanks. Always good to have the opportunity to get the mix of all of UAF here in the room. I just came back from a trip on Friday to visit with the Kuskokwim campus. And, you know, for those faculty who are primarily here in Fairbanks, seeing what goes on at our rural campuses is really exciting work being done that really helps transform the communities that we serve. And Kuskokwim Bernice and I had a good opportunity to meet with the faculty and staff, meet with the advisory committee, and think in part about the future of leadership at CRCD. As many of you know, Bernice will be retiring in May-June timeframe, and so we're thinking about sort of what's next for CRCD and what will we be looking for. So she and I will be visiting each of the rural campuses over the course of the spring to have that an opportunity for that discussion. Previous week, the Board of Regents had their annual retreat, opportunity for the board to think through what they want to accomplish over the coming year. A portion of it the chancellors participate in, a portion it's just the board and the president. A portion that we participated in, there was some discussion that I think calls on us at UAF to take a leadership role. And the discussion was about program review. I think it's well recognized that we do a good job of periodic degree program review on the five-year cycle. And of course, last year we reviewed every one of our degree programs. But the board policy actually speaks to review of, quote, academic research and extension programs. And the board discussion was, okay, you're doing degree program review. What about academic programs that aren't degree-oriented? And what about research programs? And what about extension programs? How do you do a review that has the same rigor that we have for our degree program review? Well, as the state's lead research institution, figuring out how best to do research program review falls to us. And so over the course of this spring, we'll be working on what might be the sort of the units of review, and then in the same fashion we do with academic program review, taking an academic year, next academic year, to go through that research program review. I've talked with the Faculty Senate leadership and want to work with the Research Advisory Committee, Chair Dane and other members, in terms of thinking through how we're going to do that review on the research side and then on the extension side, and then on those academic programs that aren't oriented toward a degree. And then finally, as long as we're doing the academic research and extension programs, looking at student services and administrative programs with the same degree of rigor and analysis over the course of the next year. So I'm really looking to the Senate to actively participate in the rest of program review as the board asks for it. I'm open as to exactly what that process will be and what the product will be, but we have to demonstrate to the board that we're following their policy. If we don't lead on it, others will tell us how they want to do the review, which is one reason that I think it's important that UAF take the lead. And I can answer any questions, it may be better to ask the questions later in the year once we've started thinking through how we're going to go about doing it. An issue that's come up several times before the Senate over the last year, what day of the week do we have commencement? Absent a groundswell for changing, we're going to stick where we are with Sunday commencements, and I approve today the academic calendars for academic year 15 and 16. The legislature has started on our budget review. UAF budget is slated for work with the House Finance Subcommittee on the 19th of February. Mike Davis can probably tell you more about what's going on in Juneau than I can because I haven't been there yet this year. The President's had a couple of opportunities to speak to legislators. It's clear it's going to be a tight budget year in FY14. We have a very slim governor's request for the university with essentially half the pay raise money to open up buildings, and that's about it. We also, of course, face whatever happens at the federal level with sequestration or alternative sequestration and the smallest tuition increase in over a decade. So we know it's going to be a tight year. It's our hope that the legislature will see fit to add back in some of the things that were in the Board of Regents request that we worked on here at the campus level, and that will come out a little bit better than where the governor started. Same thing on the capital budget. The governor essentially with a looking at deferred maintenance only, but there's key legislative interest in addressing unfinished buildings. And when you hear them talk about unfinished buildings, they're really thinking about the two engineering buildings at UAA and UAF as primary ones that are half funded. And so that's good news that's now starting to make the news. I'll report back to the Senate at next month's meeting on what the reception is and what the issues are that are raised by the House Finance Subcommittee. Finally, for those who haven't already made plans, again, an invitation to a reception at our house. Sherry and I are always happy to welcome the Senate to our house when you're here in town at least once a year. So anyone who hasn't otherwise made plans, hope to see you this evening. And with that, I'll answer any questions that people have.
There are no questions for the Chancellor. Let's move on to Provost comments.
Well, just before I came to the meeting today, I emailed out to Dean's Directors and Vice Chancellors a template for filing FY15 budget requests for the next legislative session after this one. As the Chancellor's already outlined, there are a variety of reasons to not think that we're going to get tens of millions of dollars in additional funding from the legislature, either in FY14 or FY15, beyond what we hope for from the capital budget, but in terms of the operating budget. However, for good ideas, there may be an opportunity. I don't want to discourage anyone from putting forth a real need or a great idea in terms of a budget request. We are going to be probably limited to about $3 million in new operating requests by the Board of Regents and President, as we have been for the past couple of years. So that gives you kind of a framework for the university as a whole. Also, as many of you have experienced in the past, there are certain things that can capture the interest and imagination of the legislature, and other things where it's very difficult to do that. Easier when we're talking about student success and things like that. A little bit more difficult if we're talking about adding administration or beefing up the processing of paperwork or something relatively important, but nonetheless hard to capture legislators' interest with. The other thing I want to mention is that at the end of the budget request document, there's a different kind of sheet that is there for the deans and directors and vice chancellors, informed by the faculty and departments and staff that they supervise, to bring forward essentially their biggest budget problem or problems. And that's because I feel anyway, and probably most of the other vice chancellors to an extent have this feeling, although I probably have it to a greater extent because I have a relatively large domain. Sometimes it's hard for me to track what each of my unit's worst problem is. And so I would, I'm making this request so that I will have those at my fingertips, so that I will know what your biggest challenges are, even if they don't really come together in terms of a budget request that would be likely to be successful with the board or with the legislature. We won't be asking for new internal reallocation requests formally this year. That's because any money that we might have available for internal reallocation is already committed to a number of prior situations which need further financial support. So there's at least a one-year hiatus in soliciting new requests for internal reallocation. So those budget requests are going to be due to me and to the Office of Management and Budget March 1st. Please be thinking about this and communicating with your dean or director or vice chancellor in order to get the best request possible put forward. I'll add just one more thing to this, and that is more and more I keep hearing, and I think you probably keep hearing, that this is a time of change, a time of great uncertainty. The future is going to be different from the present in terms of universities. There are financial challenges. There are big technological changes. There are changes in students, their motivation, their demographics, what they want from higher education. And so in thinking about your budget request, I would want everyone to think about, how are we going to respond as a university to these changes? And is there anything that we should be emphasizing in terms of financial requests? They're going to help us be the best university in Alaska in 2020 and 2030, as well as in 2013. So I'd be happy to answer any questions. Some of the specifics of process are going to be talked about a little bit by Julie and Derek with the Office of Management and Budget presentation later in the meeting. Are there any questions for the provost? Somber topics. All right. Then we'll move on. Let's start discussion items. The first item here is a comment from the chair of the Faculty Development, Assessment, and Improvement Committee. Franz, take it away.
Yes. So my name is Franz Meyer. I'm currently chairing the Faculty Development, Assessment, and Improvement Committee. And I wanted to, I asked for a 5-minute slot today because I wanted to inform you of some activities that are going on right now and that you should know about and hopefully also sort of contribute to the process. So if you remember, in the October meeting of the Faculty Senate, we were informed that the Faculty Senate was asked to reevaluate its stance towards electronic course evaluations. So the way we are sort of getting feedback from the students for the course quality. And so currently, in most classes, this is a paper trail approach. And the idea is to look into electronic versions and doing this online. And so this came up before in the Faculty Senate, and we were asked to reevaluate our stance on this. And this came onto sort of ended up on the table of the of this committee, and we are collaborating with Eric Mattson, who's also sitting in the back from the Education School of Education, to evaluate this topic. So what we have done so far is we have dedicated some research towards identifying all the different vendors and all the different possibilities that are out there, all the different providers of online evaluation forms. And we have down-selected those vendors towards a set of about 12 that sort of meet the requirements of UAF. And what we are doing right now and what we have just started is we have set up demonstrations, which are one-hour sort of online presentations by these vendors, where they explain the main features of their tools. They explain the functionality of the tools, and we especially also ask them to present on how they are trying to encourage students to actually respond to those evaluation requests. One of the main concerns that people have had in the past with online evaluation is that not a lot of students are actually following through, and the return rate is fairly low. So every one of those vendors will comment specifically on that topic. So pretty much every week throughout this semester, we will have one-hour demonstration by these vendors. And there was an email that was sent out on January 18th by Eric Mattson that has all the details for all the different demonstrations in it. It's the full schedule with all the demonstrations. There are web links to either the WebEx or the Meeting Place online versions of the presentations, plus phone numbers to call in if you cannot make it to the place where these evaluations happen. We meet most of the time in Rasmussen 503 for those meetings, and they're always mostly on Friday morning from 9 to 10 o'clock. So I would encourage all of you to, everybody that has some stakes in that process, to try to make some of those and to get an idea of what current evaluation systems can do for universities. I would encourage you to approach your deans and try to get one person appointed that tries to attend most of them. Because in the end, we're trying to down-select those 12 and select a smaller group of tools that are useful for UAF and that we can evaluate further. In order to be allowed to do that, we need people that consistently attend most of them. So please, I encourage you to participate, and I encourage you to find somebody in your group that is regularly participating. And especially, we want people from departments that are to some degree non-traditional. We have a lot of people that are currently in those meetings that are teaching in a more traditional environment. But if you're teaching either distance ed, if you're teaching on a rural campus where internet access might be an issue, or if you're teaching field classes where you may be out in the field and have no internet at all, you may have a very specific take on how your evaluation has to be done. So especially if you're one of those groups, we really encourage you to listen in. If you can't come by, dial in, click on the WebEx link, and give us your feedback so that we can make a decision or a recommendation that is representing UAF as a whole. So our goal right now is to listen to those 12 and then select a group of, say, 3 or 4 that are meeting our requirements, summarize that, and then get back to the Senate and proposing next steps. And such next steps could be trial periods with some of those. So I think it's worth looking into this again, because since the Faculty Senate has looked at that the last time, a lot of things have changed with Facebook and the entire, you think of smart devices. I think the willingness and the ability of students to do this online has changed. So what we have heard from the providers, the response rate has increased because people are more used to doing things online nowadays. So please help us out in the process, participate in the process. We will be trying to send out the just once more the entire schedule so that you have the, have it with you in your inbox. The next meeting is on February 8 at 9 o'clock and in Rasmussen 503. And the email you will get hopefully later this week will again show you the link to go to get the WebEx link and the phone number to call in if you can't come to Rasmussen. But please participate and try to find somebody that listens to more than only one. And that's the message I had. Thank you.
Any questions or comments?
Are there really more than cosmetic differences among these 12?
That's really what we're trying to find out right now. And we do see, so the general approach is very similar, but we do see from these demos you sort of get an idea of their level of experience and you know, their level of guidance they can provide. We've heard, you know, we have done three so far. One of them was answering more in a way like, we can do whatever you want. And others tried to show that they have done this for a while and they gave us way more guidance in what to do. And they have different opinions about how they're approaching specific things. Like if we, for instance, asked whether we can mix paper reviews with online reviews, and there are very different opinions on that topic. So depending on what we prefer, there are differences. Yeah.
Cecile.
The system we're using now was designed for a very different purpose than it's being used for. I mean,
can you use the microphone, please?
Oh, sorry.
The system we're using now was designed for a very different purpose than it's being used now. It was designed to provide feedback to the faculty, not as a performance evaluation tool. And so I think as we look at these others, we need to pay attention to that. What the, you know, what are they being used for, and in other words, and how do they go about measuring that? But I think to me that's the primary concern. That's much more important than, you know, how many students will click on the buttons in the end. But it's, what are they designed to actually measure? What do they actually measure?
Yeah, so I think different people have different takes on this topic. So the more people we can get looking at those options, the better off we are. So again, please participate.
Any other questions? All right, let's move on to the second discussion item. And this is a discussion of using the grade of C- as acceptable for courses in one's major and for prerequisites. And Rainer Newberry will describe this for us.
Okay, this is a three-day discussion item that I've got 5 minutes to do. Everybody on Curricular Affairs Committee understands all the issues. Raise your hand, please, if you're on Curricular Affairs. Come on, Dave. That's right, okay. So there's Todd, raise your hand. Come on. Okay. So I'm going to try to introduce it in now 4.5 minutes. Grab one of us during the break today and or after the meeting or email us later, because almost – Richetta, you didn't raise your hand, did you? Okay, that's fine. Okay, all right. So that almost certainly there's going to be a motion at the next Faculty Senate meeting. This gives us a month to cogitate about it, ask our peers about it, all this kind of good stuff. Okay, here's the deal. Back in the old days when we had just plain old grades, no plus minuses, a grade of C was acceptable for the major, for the minor, for a prerequisite. Then, thanks in part to our former Faculty Senate Chairperson Paul Lehr, we switched to plus minuses. There was a couple of year period where it was unclear whether, in fact, a C minus was, in fact, a C for the purpose of major, minor prerequisites. And the Faculty Senate, in its wisdom, decided that, in fact, a C minus was not a C, and that, in fact, we were going to declare that you needed to have a grade of C, 2.0 C, not C minus, in order to do things. That had a bunch of consequences, including the fact that sometimes faculty gave students a C-minus knowing that they would need to retake the class in order to get credit for it. Some cases they did it not knowing, and then all kinds of hell broke loose as they tried to correct that. Some faculty basically don't give C-minuses because they know that that's going to happen, all kinds of wild things. But more importantly, It's inconsistent. Board of Regents policy says that C is a, and they mean C presumably in the whole gamut of Cs, is an acceptable grade. We accept as transfers a C minus, but, and so a course in one's major, for example, in which a student got a C minus, would transfer as credits, but not as satisfying that requirement. They get the credits for the class, but they still have to retake it in order to get it to for their major or minor, okay? And, of course, we also, in our wisdom, a couple of years ago decided that for a core class you had to have a minimum grade of C minus. So, you know, this could be solved in by saying, damn it, C's, only a C is good, which, again, was put us out of in conflict with Board of Regents business. The alternative is to say, well, after all, traditionally we let people get by with a C minus because, in fact, that was included within the whole package of what was a C. Let's say that we made a mistake or whatever and got back to C minus is okay. The key problem with doing this is that there were some C minuses given in the past that were really intended to be C minuses, like you must take this class over. We can certainly specify that if we change to C minus is okay, that only C minuses after June 1st, July 1st, whatever, 2013 are going to count. There's still going to be some students who are going to try to petition the roll C minuses as being okay. It's going to be a little ugly for a couple of years, okay? But the long term is that, okay, we'd have a consistent policy. It would be consistent with our pre-plus minus policy, and it would be less confusing to students. So we're probably going to bring this up next meeting. And the reason why this is kind of a rush is, A, if we're going to do it, the sooner we do it, the sooner we're into the – it's like pulling off a Band-Aid, right? The sooner we just bite the bullet and do it, the better. And in terms of regulations, we have to get it into the catalog, which means it has to be done by early March in order to make it into the catalog to become effective. So either we approve it next meeting, in which case it becomes effective with the next catalog, or we don't approve it, in which case we put off the misery for a while or continue dealing or I'll jump off or whatever.
Okay, and so you've brought this to the Faculty Senate to let everyone know
that this is coming.
That this is coming.
And we want people to talk about it, particularly with those of us who have discussed the issue and understand better perhaps some of the ramifications or not, or to yell at us and say this is the stupidest idea I've ever heard or whatever.
So heads up, everyone, that we will have a vote on this in the next meeting. We think.
We think.
Okay. No guarantees. We think. All right. Anything else? Good. So let's move on to new business. Item A, motion to authorize you. Let me read the actual motion. That's better. Motion. This Senate supports the formation of a Faculty Alliance GE Learning Outcomes UA Coordination Subcommittee to include equal representation from each MAU and to work on the general charge of identifying a common set of general education learning outcomes, i.e. broad goals, to recommend to the Faculty Senates at each MAU in late 2013. As a background statement, this same motion has been sent to the Senates at UAS and UAA. We think that UAA is going to agree to this very quickly. We don't have any word from UAS yet. David, why don't you explain the background of this one?
I mentioned in my remarks that we had a workshop in January that was sponsored by the statewide system. And it was for the purposes of number one, in my view, was moving forward in general on achieving a sort of a revitalization of general education across the entire state. One of the sub-objectives was, well, is there any way that, at least broadly speaking, all three MAUs could be at least trying to target the same sorts of learning outcomes? And the participants in the workshop came back and said, "Well, yeah, we'd like to advance that idea," and recommended as part of an action plan that they put together that such a committee be constituted from across all three MAUs with the intent of developing a common set of learning outcomes, meaning very broad goals. About 2 years ago, a little less than 2 years ago, this Faculty Senate approved a set of learning outcomes that was proposed by the first group of faculty that comprised the GERC, the General Education Revitalization Committee. The faculty at the other two MAUs recognize our leadership in moving forward on general education revitalization. They don't necessarily want to simply adopt what UAF has come up with as learning outcomes, but see an advantage in using that as at least a starting point. So the question before us today with respect to this motion is, should we appoint faculty to participate in this cross-MAU committee that we're calling the General Education Learning Outcome Committee, or the JELO Committee? And that's the question before us.
All right, so any discussion on this? We're essentially asking for your approval to send representatives to this committee. All right, if there's no discussion, let's vote on the motion. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say nay. Any abstentions? One abstention. All right, the motion passes. And Donnie, have the next three motions from your committee, the Graduate Academic and Advisory Committee. Would you please introduce these and explain them to us?
Yes, I will. So the first two go together. It's a motion and a resolution. And so this was a topic that was brought up to GAC. Many of the master's programs in the university require either a thesis or a project. Some do not require either. At present, they are distinguished only in the sense that on the transcript, projects generally require 6 credits of research, which is labeled as 698, while theses often but not always require 12 credits of research listed as 699. The process for approving a thesis is generally more stringent than for achieving a project, requires more levels of review. And there was some concern that was expressed to us that it wasn't helpful to prospective employers or even to the students themselves for the master's with thesis versus master's with project option being distinguished only in this sort of cryptic way, which an employer or somebody wouldn't necessarily know from looking at the transcript what the distinction between 698 and 699 is. So the motion simply states that we request that the Office of Admissions and the Registrar distinguish master's degrees within the transcript in the title as master's with thesis or master's with project in the title if it's applicable. Some master's degrees don't have either. And that will make it much more clear both for the students and the prospective employers.
And Paul, would you like to make a comment about the text of this?
Sure. What I would like to request is in the rationale that the correct titles for 698 and 699 be used, which are, you just simply call them both research, but really one is, I don't know what the correct title is.
Non-thesis research.
Non-thesis research and thesis research for 699.
Right.
And so I would like the rationale to reflect those correct titles to distinguish that there are differences in the types of research.
I think the committee would have no objection to doing that. In fact, we just had another discussion about allowing the registrar's office to go ahead and put those titles into banner where they don't currently occur, and that'll make it easier for the students as well. They won't have to petition to change the credits. So, yeah, I think that would be fine.
Thank you.
All right. So that change, if the Senate agrees to it, would be projects generally require 6 credits of non-thesis research, 698, while theses often but not always require 12 credits of thesis research. All right. Do I hear a motion to amend this in that fashion?
I move.
All those in favor of the amendment?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Good. That was easy.
I would just add one more thing, which is that the registrar's office has assured us that there is no problem from their point of view about putting this in the transcript. It's fine with them.
I'm sorry. This is Christine Cook, and I had a quick question. I couldn't get my phone off mute. Does this mean that they have to have a minimum of 6 credits per project? Because, for example, in the counseling master's program, the project is a minimum of 3 credits. And so I want to make sure that's not going to make it so our students have to have 6 credits of the research project, and then because we require 6 credits of thesis and 3 credits for projects.
No, it doesn't change any of the requirements for programs that are already approved. All it would do is just clarify in the transcript whether it was received with a project or with a thesis.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Any other questions?
I have a question. So when would this effect take place? My reasoning being there might be students out there that consciously made a choice one way or another to do research with a thesis or with a project, being fully aware that there was no distinction in what their award looked like, and you know they're partway through the project or partway through the thesis. So it seems to me a little unfair to then go and change what you're awarding them at this point.
Well, they're still getting a master's degree. So we had said it would be effective fall 2013. It's just it would specify what type of master's degree they're getting.
Yeah, but I feel like you should have given them that choice prior to them commencing their project or thesis.
Well, so currently when they sign in, they are supposed to, in departments where there's a choice. So some departments, you're in a program and it is either with a thesis or with it's a project. But there are some departments where they can make the choice to choose either one. And I think one of the concerns that was raised for us as to for wanting to do this was that there was a perception that sometimes students that aren't doing very well with their thesis are kind of switched over into being with a project because it's easier for them to get out. And that was not, if it's felt that was not the way that UA ought to be going about awarding master's degrees. So
yeah. I agree in principle in distinguishing between the two and that it's helpful to employees and to students. But I feel to retroactively apply that to students that are already partway through their project is maybe a little unfair. That's
well, yeah.
Comment.
I mean, I guess like Reiner said, it might cause confusion for a few years, but hopefully within a year or two, everybody would be starting out and it would all be very clear.
I would make a comment that this has also been discussed in terms of truth in advertising, that all we're doing is stating more detail about the student's degree.
Exactly.
You still get a Master of Science in whatever. It's the same degree. Any other? Anybody disagree with that? Anybody want to comment? All right, let's vote on the motion then. All those in favor of... yeah? So go ahead, Tony.
Wow. All right.
I was jumping ahead.
She wants it. She wants it. All right. So we are voting on requiring that the student's transcript would now read master's with thesis or master's with project if that applies. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, say nay.
Nay.
Any abstentions? All right, the ayes have it. Motion carries. And there's an accompanying resolution.
Yes, so the background with the resolution is that it was pointed out that along with this unclearness about the theses versus the projects, that the theses all have to be archived in the Rasmussen Library. But at the present time, the projects are not all archived. Some are archived in the library. Some are archived by the department. Some are not archived at all. So there's no record of them after the student leaves. And so originally, we passed a motion to the administrative committee to require archival of projects as well as theses. And then it turned out that in its wisdom, the Senate had already passed this motion quite a while ago in 1997. And it just has not been, it has vanished from the collective knowledge since that time. So this resolution is to reaffirm the previous motion and require that both theses and projects be archived in the Rasmussen Library and to put that requirement into the catalog. And the Rasmussen Library already archives the theses, and they're willing to centrally archive the projects in a wide variety of formats. So they are all on board about archiving the projects.
Any discussion of this? Yes, Cindy.
I'm noticing that it says MA and MS degrees, but we have other kinds of master's degrees, including the MFA, which does do a thesis. I'm assuming they'd be included, but I just think we should be careful that the language is inclusive.
Yes, we agree that would be the intent.
Any other comments? Yes, Debu?
I just have a quick question. Currently, some of the projects are just being archived in electronic format. So within the program. Now, if it goes to the library, will that still continue as an electronic format?
I think I can address that. We are developing an institutional repository. I believe that all theses very soon will be required to be submitted in electronic content. So some of them may exist only in that form, that's my understanding. But all theses will be on the institutional repository.
Anyone else?
I just want to comment, I think this is a very good idea, and it'll make it a lot easier for employers to conduct the necessary investigations. I've actually run into a similar situation years past when I was working in an employment type setting where a person claimed to have a master's degree, or no, it was a PhD, and there was no record of their dissertation or anything. So it's very hard for an employer to validate whether the person is in fact claiming the credentials that they are stating. So I agree with this.
Jennifer?
Yes, Paul.
This is just speaking as for myself as dean of CNSM and does not represent any other deans, but when they're with project masters as they're currently implemented, pretty much it's the department sign off. I just get a form that says that they did it. There's no real larger review. I don't get to read them. Or I don't read them generally, and the grad school doesn't review them. If they're going into the archive, which they should, they're representing the institution. And I would like GAC maybe to consider what the approval process ought to be for projects in the future. It's just something that I would like some input as dean. It's representing my college, and I haven't talked to any other deans about whether that's it'll be acceptable. Most of mine are theses anyway. But there are some programs in physics and math where projects are used, and so I just feel there's a quality control issue that concerns me as a dean.
All right, so we can leave that as a question for the committee to take up.
Yes, we'll take that up.
Maybe. All right, let's go back to the comment from Cindy. As I understand what you had suggested, Cindy, we could modify the resolution to read, the UAF Faculty Senate reaffirms its previous motion to require that both theses and projects for master's degrees be archived. So we strike of arts and master's of science.
That would do it.
That?
You want a motion to amend that?
Love it.
Okay, that's my motion.
All right, do I hear a second?
Second.
Great. Those in favor of amending the resolution?
Aye.
All right. Keep you guys active. So any other comments or suggestions on this resolution? Let's vote on it. Yeah?
I was just going to point out that the third item under motivation and background lists MA and MS degrees, and we should perhaps change that to reflect the new wording above.
Well, I don't know if that's accurate. We'd have to check the catalog. So maybe we'd leave that alone. All right, so all those in favor of the amended resolution, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right, the resolution is approved. Let's take a break now, and the reason is that we are going down to the lower level of Wood Center for a photo shoot. Todd Paris is going to take the official photo of the Faculty Senate. We will have a 10-minute break. When we're done with the photo, there are still refreshments in the back corner of the room, and please be back here in 10 minutes. Thank you. Everyone, please take your seats. All right, we are still dealing with new business. We're on item D, which was scheduled for before the photo shoot, but we broke early. So item D is another submission from the Graduate Academic and Advisory Committee. Tony, would you explain this?
Sure. So this was originally brought to our attention by the graduate school. At the present time, the UAF catalog wording says you have to be enrolled, you have to enroll in 3 graduate credits in your last semester, but it doesn't say you have to stay enrolled in them. And so a clever student realized this, and they signed up, and then they dropped them after they'd gotten their degree. They got their degree so quickly that they were able to drop them. And so the graduate school originally said, well, can't we just state that you have to maintain enrollment? And then when we started discussing this, we realized that there's sort of 2 different situations. One is that you defend your thesis and you graduate in the same semester, and clearly that's going to require a lot of work by your committee and your advisor to help you get through. The second scenario that happens reasonably often is that you think you're going to graduate in one semester and you go through and you defend your thesis, but you don't actually get everything finished by the time that the next semester starts. And so we thought that it would be more kind to the students to not require them to be registered for 3 credits in that last semester if they've already defended their thesis. So the motion says that we move that the UAF catalog wording be changed to include the following language pertaining to the graduate degree. You must be registered for a minimum of 3 graduate credits within your discipline and maintain enrollment in the semester that you successfully defend your thesis, and you must be registered for a minimum of 1 graduate credit within your discipline and maintain enrollment during the semester that you graduate. Graduate school is very keen to have students registered in that last semester so that they can track them. And having them not registered at all is difficult in terms of understanding who is a student and, you know, when they finish. It has been pointed out that this would result in a loss of revenue if they only have to be registered for 1 credit in their final semester if they've already defended their thesis in a previous semester. But we thought that on balance the students, it would certainly be more generous to students who just have a little bit of work done to be finished. So I think that's the introduction.
All right. Do we have discussion of this motion? Yes.
I did a rough estimate of how much revenue we're talking about. It could be up to about $50,000 a semester, and that would be about $25,000, counting the non-resident students for administrative services, and about $25,000 spread amongst the schools and colleges. So it's not a vast amount of money, but it's not zero either. I just thought I'd let people know what the revenue hit is likely to be.
Yes, Debu.
I'm just curious to know that if a student is defending the thesis and graduating the same semester, should they be required to register for 4 credits? Or is it still 3?
No, this would maintain the 3 credits. So that if they defend their thesis and they graduate, then they just have to be registered for 3 credits because that's the semester that they defend their thesis. So that would be in concurrence with the current policy. It's not changing anything about that.
But this language is different.
Must be registered for a minimum of 3 graduate credits and maintain enrollment in the semester that you successfully defend your thesis. Oh, I see what you're saying. That just shows I'm not very good at writing motions, I guess.
It's fine. Because it says in both cases a minimum.
And a minimum, yeah.
So the minimum of 1 only applies if you've already defended and you're just graduating. Otherwise, is that all right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was just bringing it up because I got confused.
Sure, good. Julie?
I don't know that if this would be for or against what you're proposing, but there are other reasons that students don't graduate maybe as early as originally expected. So sometimes there is some gaming involved because of employment opportunities, and so they extend the potential graduation date for that reason. That doesn't have anything necessarily directly related to do with how much work they do or do not have left to do. And I don't know how that would play in one way or another, but it is another fact.
David.
One item that hasn't come up in discussion yet about this is that, to me, this strikes me as a merciful motion to the faculty involved. I have been involved in a number of graduate committees where the end of the semester has been like a series of hell weeks because everybody had to have their theses back and fully revised and submitted to the graduate school or else. This makes it a little bit easier for students that have a bit extra work to do to say, I'm sorry, you're going to have to wait till next semester to have this fully revised. So I just wanted to make that point about how it affects our lives.
Paul.
Being devious and thinking about what Julie just said, so how many semesters can I enroll in one credit? So I could defend really super early and then have how many more credits of only having to enroll in one credit instead of three? I mean, that's kind of devious, but we've had students who've hung on for ever after defending. Is there a limit?
How many?
Yes. How many
Out of thousands?
Oh, no.
So I don't think that they have to enroll in three credits for every semester up until they graduate, or under the motion, they'd
no,
have
I
to.
Understand.
So it's just the final semester.
That's the way it's written now. There is a little bit of ambiguity. It's true.
Ryan.
One other issue is good standing. So for a graduate student to maintain good standing, that takes six credits per year. But those can be graduate or 400 level. I think if you were trying to gain
right,
one
to,
credit,
you have to maintain
that
registration. True.
That's right.
Yeah, and Chancellor Rogers has reminded me there is a seven-year limit on the master's enrollment. So there's a system-wide enrollment limit.
Would it be possible for a student to be graduating, they're signed up for the one credit that this requirement adds, but not be in good standing anymore? Because I guess the year hasn't finished, so good question. Until the end of the year ends, you can't tell if they're in good standing or not.
Well, it was pointed out that students that graduate finish and graduate in December don't actually have six graduate credits in that final year because they finish before the year is done, but that's just we don't stop them from doing that. So I think the intention here is that if a student is just almost all the way there but not quite there, this makes their last semester a little bit easier to get them out. If they try to prolong it for more than one semester, then they're going to get in trouble with needing six credits per year to be in good standing things. So that should hopefully discourage them from doing that.
Good point.
Yep.
Okay.
Yes, Ken.
I was thinking about that exact thing. What's going to happen to them if they do? Are we prepared to enforce that?
If
any students that don't graduate within that semester, they only take one credit?
Well, I think then they're not in good standing with the graduate school anymore. So that's up to the graduates. However that works now, those folks who are more experienced can say.
Yes, I'm sorry. So
I'm just wondering how this is going to impact the foreign students in order to be in the good books of the ICE, which is Immigration Customs and Enforcement. You need to have at least a full-time status, which is 9. Okay, so they really don't benefit from this motion at all.
That's correct, but they also can't use the system of registering only for 3.
Yes, they can.
They can.
They can only. They are okay with 3 credits in their final semester, I'm not sure about the one credit. I don't know how that would change, and so that's worth looking into with international programs. Now, international students have registration requirements that American citizens do not have across the board. For instance, an American citizen can take a semester off and not be enrolled at all, but that doesn't necessarily apply to people on student visas. So I think it's probably okay if it turns out that the registration requirements for international students will be different than those for American citizens, but we'll want to make sure that it's absolutely clear to those students so that they don't have any problems with their visas.
Yes.
Since you don't distinguish in the catalog, foreign student versus American student versus native, you know, we should probably put that in the language then, if you're going to distinguish these students that way.
Well, it seems to me that what we're doing here is writing the university requirements, and that what the provost was saying is that there are federal legal requirements that override these
mm-hmm.
for some students. So they're two separate things, and the federal ones take precedence where they apply. That anyone disagree with that? Okay.
I think we should have one set of rules. That way, you know, it's easy to follow.
We can rule over the third.
Okay, any other? Yes, David.
I would submit that coming up with a comprehensive set of rules is perhaps outside the scope of this motion. And that could be.
I would agree with that.
Okay.
Okay. Any other comments on the motion? Ready to vote then. All those in favor of this motion, say aye.
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 All those opposed, say nay.
Nay.
One nay. Any abstentions? 1, 2, 3 abstentions. Motion carries. We now move on to the next item of new business, and this is a motion from the Faculty Affairs Committee. Cecile. This is item E in new business, motion to revise the grade appeals policy to clarify the time period within which grade appeals will be reviewed.
Okay. Okay, currently there is the issue that if a student submits a grade appeal during the summer, the university has X number of days to review that grade appeal. But if it happens during the summer, there isn't always a group of faculty on contract who can review that grade appeal. And so we changed the policy to still allow the student to submit their appeal during the summer, but to change the language to when that appeal would be reviewed if it was submitted during the summer. So to give the university a little bit of extra time. And then if there is a committee and people are willing to review over the summer, they still can, but they don't have to.
Okay, and I'll read the language change. It now says the review of grade appeals submitted during the summer, i.e. after completion of final exams in the spring semester, must be scheduled, the review of these appeals must be scheduled no later than the 15th working day of the beginning of the subsequent fall semester. So it essentially says that appeals filed in the summer might not be heard until the beginning of the fall.
Right.
And that is the current practice. It's just that the regulations and the policy don't say that. Saying it here clarifies to the students what they should expect. Any discussion of this?
Just a point of clarification from Cecile. When it says 15th working day of the beginning of the subsequent fall semester, is that the 15th working day following when people go back onto contract or 15th working day after classes resume?
That's actually, we hadn't thought of that. That wasn't clarified in the old policy either, so I don't actually know what that would be. My guess would be from start of instruction rather than start of faculty contract.
Right, the beginning of the semester.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's a question because, you know, number five, Paul, it just simply says a hearing within 10 working days of receipt of the student's request. If her student's request comes in January 2nd, we have 10 days after that, which is when people are on contract, but they may not be around. Semester is not ongoing, and that's been an issue that I've wrestled with.
So not just summer, but also winter break.
Well, you know, that's the question of, you know, technically you're on contract, but
mm-hmm.
you're not here. And I've had problems trying to find people to meet that 10-day, working day deadline for appeals
mm-hmm.
in the winter, like
mm-hmm.
right now. I mean, a month ago.
Well, I mean, we could lengthen the review day to 30 days.
Well,
tying it to the start of the semester is fine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Tying it 10 working days from the start of the semester.
Mm-hmm. So what we need to do is to not refer to summer and spring. We need to say something like during or outside of the fall and spring semesters.
So grade appeal submitted, yeah.
Or the following regular semester?
Right.
Where summer is not a regular semester?
Instead of saying regular, just say fall and spring, because then people know for sure what you're talking about.
Another Section C talks about class.
Could we just say, like, last day or first day of instruction? Be quite it's usually quite clear in the course catalog.
Well, see, summer includes days of instruction, right?
Then maybe you have to indicate spring and fall semester.
Okay, how about this? As per B.1-C above, the review of grade appeals submitted outside of the fall and spring semesters must be scheduled no later than the 15th working day of the subsequent fall or spring semester.
Is that in conflict with 5, the part that you're not changing in 5, which says must have a hearing within 10 working days of receipt of the student's request?
Yeah, and then...
As per... Okay.
Right. And then review of grade appeals submitted outside of
okay.
the... Yeah, I know. It's confusing. Outside of the fall and spring semesters must be scheduled no later than the 15th working day of the next fall or spring semester. So it covers the winter break, the Maymesters, the summer, yeah.
Jen?
Yes, Orion.
It might be we could simplify things by replacing working with class days. Because working days keep happening during breaks and in the summertime and over spring break, and if we just said class days, then that clarifies what the beginning of the semester means, the beginning mm-hmm. of class days, actual days of instruction.
Anybody have a comment on that? Ken?
To clarify totally here, because 1C, you want in one place say class days, another place you don't say what kind of days, it simply says 5 days, and then in 5 you're talking working days. I would think it would be wise to unify all of them one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
I also wanted to just point out that the language, maybe it should go, I'm on the same committee with Cecile, and maybe it should go back to the committee for wordsmithing, because the suggestion that it's fall or spring semester and then the following fall or spring semester makes it sound like it could be spring and then following spring.
Okay. Yeah. So I agree this sounds like it should go back to the committee. You now have some specific feedback from the Senate to turn it around. Everybody agree with that? Table this motion. Okay. Good. Next. New business motion F. Brainer, this is the motion to approve a new minor in military security studies.
Honestly, this is harmless. No, entirely harmless. We're not tricking.
Okay. Any questions or discussion of this motion? This is, all right, I'll read the motion. The UAF Faculty Senate moves to approve a new minor in military security studies, parentheses, housed in the School of Management, end parentheses. There is an overview of the minor, a list of classes, and a description of who approves which classes. So this is a partnership with Homeland Security and School of Management, Emergency Management. This is mainly going to be of interest to veterans and active military. Any discussion? All right, let's vote on it. All those in favor, say aye.
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 All those opposed, say nay. Any abstentions? Motion is unanimous. Carries unanimously. All right. Motion... Item G, motion to amend transfer credit policy. This is submitted by Core Review and Curricular Affairs.
Okay, this is going to look a little confusing because you're thinking, didn't we vote on this last meeting? And we didn't vote on this particular part. I want to drag you to item number 6, okay, which is the heart of it. And that is that when the Faculty Senate agreed to accept an AA or AS in lieu of the core general education requirements, we put on a whole bunch of qualifiers, in part because faculty were afraid that this was going to open the floodgates, and in fact nobody would be taking our core requirements and such. And those things included that there had to be a 2+2 program in the appropriate state and blah, blah, woof, woof. Well, what's happened is, A, it's caused a lot of time and energy in the registrar's office because they have to look these things up and whatnot. And frankly, we don't really think it makes a difference. I mean, we haven't seen this big flood. It's not like our core has turned upside down and no one's taking it or anything like that. And it would both make the requirements a whole lot easier, would make the catalog listing shorter, it would make lots of people's lives easier if we simply changed item number 6. So it now reads, any student who has completed an Associate of Arts or Associate of Science degree from a regionally accredited school will be considered as having satisfied 100 and 200 level UAF general education paren core requirements. Full stop. That's what this motion wants to do.
Is it harmless?
It's better than that. It would do good.
Okay. And you were saying this looks familiar because?
Well, because we did core things last meeting.
Right. And this is consistent with what we did last meeting. So is there any discussion or questions about this? I regard this as cleaning up,
yes,
essentially, and it's entirely in line with what we voted on last meeting. Any comments? All right, let's vote on the motion. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed, say nay. Abstentions? Motion carries unanimously. All right. And the last new motion is a motion to amend the credit by exam policy from Curricular Affairs Committee.
Okay, this one's actually kind of funny, but I'll tell everybody the long story some other time when you're prepared for it. At any rate, the regulation right now about credit for exam just basically says, hey, you want a credit for exam? Go for it. And it's not until you actually start looking at the paperwork where it says, oh, by the way, you need to do this, you need to do that, you need to do this. And it's not actually in the catalog. So you'd have to wonder, is this really legal? Do I actually have to jump through these hoops? The catalog just says, if I want a credit by exam, I just go for it. So the purpose of this is to clarify to the students, to faculty, to everybody, right from the get-go, that a student cannot simply demand a credit by exam. I mean, they can demand it, but they won't necessarily get it. And that it's up to the department and the individual faculty member to decide how this is going to happen, whether it's going to happen, all that kind of good stuff. It's consistent with the current policy. It's just that policy is buried in the paperwork that the student fills out, not in the catalog per se, which is effectively our contract. I urge you to approve this.
Ryan.
Silly question, maybe, Rainer. Could a department choose to charge a fee for credit by exam to deter, you know, lots of people just trying it?
There's already a fee.
Oh, okay.
Testing services charges.
I don't know if they could increase that fee, but...
Or just mention that there is a fee.
Do you know what the fee is?
I want to say $15
$40
for credit.
$120 for street trading. $40.
Okay.
I'm remembering cash. Give me a card.
Okay, any other questions or discussion? Yes, Sukumar.
Question here. We talk about credit, you know, including a grade of F. Would that be a credit or?
Can I speak to that? That is a situation that came up recently that caused us to review this because we had a student who received an F. And the way it's stated, a course being counted credit cannot duplicate a course for which credit has already been granted. Credit was not granted because an F was received, and the department did not want to allow them to credit by.
And that's the purpose of the bold print here. Okay, so if a department is okay with saying, sure, fine, swell, let's do it by an exam, okay? And if the department isn't, they say, sorry, guy.
Anything else? Yes.
What differentiates the credit by exam course from an independent study if the instructor is asking the student to do a bunch of extra work rather than just an exam?
Could you repeat that, please, closer to the mic?
What differentiates a credit by exam course to an independent study course if the instructor who was willing to do the credit by exam is also asking the student to do extra work on top of the exam?
Independent study would be a 9-7 course, so it's not a regular catalog course, and the credit by exam is going to be the catalog.
So it would be comparable, though, in many respects in terms of the work?
So the independent study would have to be petitioned, be counted for the course on the student's record.
Yeah.
Study is,
can you do an independent study on a topic that is covered by a regular course?
You could use directed study.
Directed study. So there's a different term for that. Yeah.
Directed study is new. We started that last fall to address this so that people weren't using individual study for a
tablet. Anything else? All right, let's vote on this motion. Those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed say nay. Any abstentions? Motion carries unanimously, and that might be your last vote of the day. So there was one abstention?
Yeah.
One abstention.
Yes.
Two abstentions. Sorry, two abstentions. Thank you. All right. Now moving on to Section 7 of our agenda, we have two items listed under the guest speakers topic. The first is representatives from the UAF Office of Management and Budget. Is Derek Miller here? Oh, sorry. I'm not paying attention. It was over my left. Thank you. So would you please introduce yourselves and go right ahead.
Absolutely. Can everybody hear? My name is Julie Larwitz. I'm the Director of the Office of Management and Budget. I'm here today with my colleague, Derek Miller, who's handing out some handy pocket guides for you for the FY14 budget process. And request list. Derek is a business analyst in the Office of Management and Budget, and so you may have seen or heard from us on email. And if you haven't yet, and you're involved in the Planning and Budget Committee process, you may see and hear from us yet. So what I wanted to do today, and I know we only have a few minutes, I'm also recognizing that we brought about 20 of these pocket guides, and we do also have an online version that can be printed that I will surely forward to you after this. And if there are any that would like one of the ones that are pre-printed, we can send more to the governance group so that you can take one. But for the most part, I wanted to clarify what the role is for the Office of Management and Budget, introduce ourselves, because we've heard in the past down in Financial Services and through the Provost Office that sometimes there's a gap in getting information related to budget items and where things are in the process. Once a school or department has put requests up into these committees and they get discussed and then they go forward to the system level and to the state legislature, and oftentimes people lose track of where they are in the process. So we're here today just to try to give you a brief overview and let you know that we are an office that you are welcome to contact if you have questions, and we'll definitely try to keep those communication lines of communication open. So essentially, UAF OMB is an office that was created within the last year in financial services, and its focus is on UAF planning and budget requests in addition to analysis and reporting. We're located right next to the Office of Planning and Institutional Research pair, of which Ian Olson is the director, and so we are typically in cahoots to make sure that we can validate our data prior to reporting it to external and internal groups. We're also involved in process improvement. There are several teams on the administrative side of the house most typically. Those things right now are we're looking at recruiting and the speed at which it happens within UAS. And there's a committee formed called the Hired Team, which stands for HR, Internal Recruitment and Design. And there's a team that's also been formed to look at grant process solutions. They're called the GPS Team. And they're looking at award management, the time in which a PI gets a notification that there's money available to the time in which that person can spend. And so we're looking at ways to add efficiency to some of the administrative processes that you all may be using as well. And so a quick overview of what's in this pocket guide is a snapshot of the FY12 budget at UAF. It's the revenue by source. And it's a very high-level snapshot just to give some basics, as well as some key areas that impact the UAF budget. Major areas like student credit hours. If it goes up and or down by 1%, what the net impact would be to UAF revenues, things of that nature. As well, there's also a listing of the FY14 requests that are currently the board-approved requests that have thus far been approved at the board level as of December 2012. They've moved forward to the state, and the governor has put forth his first round budget, which so far doesn't include much. Things on the list are some deferred maintenance funding as well as 50% of the compensation increases. Really nothing yet focused on programs. And his next round amended budget will come out in February. And so we'll do our best to keep these groups informed of what it is that will be funded at UAF and for the system as we learn more and as these move through the state level. Let's see. Additionally, just to wrap up, I know that our office will be assisting the Office of the Provost with the Planning and Budget Committee work this year, and I know Susan just sent an email out today kicking off the FY14 or FY15 budget request process. I know that sounds like it's very far away, but in the fiscal calendar, it's not so far. And I do know that the focus this year will be on legislative requests because much of the FY14 internal funds at UAF have already been committed to last year's Planning and Budget Committee priorities and other things that are high priority within the UAF institution. And so I know there is an opportunity within Susan's templates that went out today for units, schools, institutes to also give us information on critical areas that we may just not know about that may be more specifically internal items as opposed to items that can move forward to the state so that we have an opportunity to just know what those are. So I don't know. We may already be out of time, but if there is a minute, Derek can certainly touch on any conditions that may be impacting us in FY14, but if not, we can also come back another time for other updates.
We are running short of time. If there's anything you particularly wanted to say, you're welcome to. But
sure. No, just appreciate the time. I guess I will say on the back of the pocket guide, there is our website address, and there are a number of resources on our website. As Julie mentioned, the FY14 budget request to the governor keeps moving forward, and as that changes, we will post those updates accordingly. We also on our website have this document, which we put together this fall. It's the fall financial review for UAF, and it goes through revenue and expenditure trends, revenue projections. There's quite a detailed appendices in here for various tables that may be of interest for you. So we encourage you to look at those things, and we can come back at a later time to update you on how things are going in Juneau and in other matters.
Right, I can say that this document, the online version, is already posted on the Faculty Senate website. It's under this meeting, so you can go download it if you need it. Are there any quick questions for them? No, well, thank you very much. Good information.
Great. Thank you. Looking forward to working with you.
All right. Our next speaker is Mike Davis. And he's going to give us a preview of this event that will happen right after the Faculty Senate meeting, focused on legislative affairs in Juneau.
slide, so just, I don't know if you can see online or not.
A couple of folks online.
Go ahead.
I didn't put my slides online.
Use the microphone.
Is there someone who could help me run those slides, and then I'll just talk? Is that possible?
You want me to do that? No, yeah, you got to run this.
Okay. At 3:15, actually today, I've invited the Legislative Information Office to come up here, and they're going to kind of walk anyone who comes, walk us through how to access information from the LIO site. It's comprehensive. There's lots of information there in terms of not only accessing information, but also getting alerts that you can be sent, how to use social media to access the legislature.
I'm sorry, just a second, Mike. We're having technical difficulties. There's a lot of cross-signaling going on. Can someone help us get the...
Well, is there a 10-year-old out there that can help us, please?
Yeah.
That's what somebody said. Find a 10-year-old.
We need a 10-year-old. Hey, how about a computer science professor?
Well, now it's rest on the line.
Okay,
is it plugged in? That's a good
Jennifer
question.
Said, Jennifer said, can you compress 30 hours of presentations into 5 minutes? I said, I'm up for the challenge. But, no, seriously, I did just get back from Juneau. I had a legislative workshop down there, and I had presentations by 31 legislators and a whole array of other people, including the Office of Management and Budget, the governor. So an array of people. These students picked up an incredible amount of knowledge, but it was an incredible honor, really, to represent those students. There were students from all across the state, from Wales to Craig to Bethel to Nome. They were phenomenal students, and this class is a workshop on the legislature, and I have to recognize my co-instructor here from last year, who's sitting in the audience. Why don't you stand up there?
Me?
Yeah. We offered this as a class last semester too. But anyway, one of the key things that we started with was trying to inform those students on how to access the legislature and what are the tools that are available to all of us online. So that's what we'll be talking about at 3:30. This is something I just showed it to our chancellor. He hadn't seen it yet. But this is facts and figures that they're handed out to the legislature. And I'll hand this around, but the chancellor says, can I get a copy of this? We're going to scan this and give it to you. But it shows, as they were saying earlier, a lot of the budget requests by the Board of Regents were not acknowledged or not recognized. So they have a long ways to go to try to get what they want in the budget. So I'll pass two of these around, and you can take a look at them. I'm also passing this potluck. The student said, Mike, can we have a potluck down there? And I'm like, gee whiz, I don't really want to do a potluck. But anyway, we did a potluck. The students brought muktuk. They brought herring eggs, smoked salmon, seaweed, and I knew it was a success when legislators were showing up before the thing started. So it was pretty phenomenal.
Sounds like your students have good instincts.
How am I doing on time? Am I light out?
Yep.
Okay, the other thing I brought, how many people are going to Juneau besides Jane? Anybody? Well, this shows you this little note for Council 1 Senator, Senator 21, which is the key budget item.
So this is the students. We have 13 students, and they were meeting with the co-chairman of finance, as I said, the co-chairman of and Representative Thompson joined that. The co-chairman of finance says, can we buy these guys pizza? And I said, I think they'll take it up on that. So the co-chairman of finance, Representative Thompson, had them up for lunch talking about issues. It was great.
Okay, I don't know where you are on the slide, but wherever it is fine.
Just advance them. What the hell?
Senator Fairclough, as you know, she's going to be a key budget person on the university budget. Spent some good time talking to students, asking questions. Yeah, I am. I'm getting to that. Okay, keep going. Okay, keep going. You can go ahead. Go ahead.
Mike?
Yes.
Do you think I could say a few words just for a second?
Yes.
I just want to say that this was an excellent class last year. Of course, I didn't get the opportunity this year, but it was so amazing to see students from all over the state change so much over a week. And I just really want to give you a lot of credit because the confidence that you instilled in these students was really fantastic. And to see that transition from day one to the end of that week was just amazing. I'd never seen anything like it in my life with a group of students, so kudos to you.
One of our meetings was with, never mind. Let's go ahead. Okay. This is what I'm going to be talking about later on, but let's go ahead and go forward a couple of slides, a couple more slides. Okay, we're going to be talking about this item right here.
And this shows the red is the savings account, and it shows what's going to happen in the future without any changes to our hologram factors. But this is why we are looking at what they projected last year to this year, about $500 million short, and we projected another $500 million short. So you can see that yellow is the capital budget. So even without any changes to our OPEC, we're not going to have as much. We'll talk about that.
This next slide shows you the influence of the budgets over the last, since 1977. This is the last time we did a major change to our tax structure.
Right here. It was supposed to be revenue neutral. It was revenue neutral. And these red lines right here show savings, money that's going to put in the savings. And again, it shows you the budget curve projected out. What's going to happen? This doesn't reflect any changes to our tax. This is what the legislature is looking at right now. This is one of the reasons when it's rising. See what's happened the last 4 or 5 years. Budget has been increasing 6 to 7% every year. And so the payment can't do this. We're going to have a flatline budget, which we know translates into so I remember
Mike?
President Hamilton said when he went down to the legislature, he said, this is the time you sit on your hands. Well, I think this legislature is the same thing. And a lot of legislators told the students, they said, we need you here. We're going to make major decisions in this legislative session. We need to get input from you and from the students.
All right. Thank you, Mike.
Can I ask you one question?
So at what time does this start?
We're going to gather at 3:15.
3:15 here. Okay. Everyone is on notice. Please stick around for this event.
No, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
All right. Then the next item on the agenda is public comments and questions. Are there any members of the public who would like to speak to the Senate? Seeing none, we'll move on to governance reports. Is there anyone from staff counsel? Is Juella here? No. ASUAF? No. UNAC, Debbie, would you like to address the Senate today?
Actually, I'll pass it on to Jane.
All right, Jane, please.
I just wanted to report the Joint Healthcare Committee met on February 1st, last Friday, and the three health plan options for FY14 were identified, and they're the 750 plan, the high deductible health plan, the same thing we've had, and then there'll be a consumer-driven health plan, which will feature an HSA, a health savings account. So those are the three plans, and the particulars have not been worked out, but will be at the end of this month. And then since the healthcare forums happened in January and February, the committee withdrew two of the motions from last fall, and those were the spousal surcharge has now been withdrawn, and the motion to restrict the opt-out option has been withdrawn. So those are no longer on the table.
Thank you, Jane. And from Athletics, Danny?
I'll reserve for next time.
All right, thank you. We'll reserve for next time. And are there any comments or other remarks from our committee chairs, committee reports? Oh, my goodness. We are then finished for the day. This meeting is adjourned.